Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's talk radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
Thank you for tuning in. If you've just tuned in, my name's Renee Giacchino. I'm corporate counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom, and you're listening to Your Turn, the program I've dubbed Meeting Nonsense with Common Sense. As always, I encourage you to call in and join in the conversation. You can do that by dialing 850-623-1330. My next guest is a former Air Force JAG officer who served as a Deputy Undersecretary of Defense in the administration of President George H.W. Bush. He's currently the editor of Human Events, and he's an expert in national security and foreign affairs. A lot of you may be familiar with his weekly column called Loose Cannons, which appears in the American Spectator Online, and he has been a regular contributor to the Washington Times, RealClearPolitics.com, and National Review Online. Please welcome to Your Turn, Jed Babin, who's the recent author of a book called In the Words of Our Enemies. Jed, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Hey, great to be with you.
Did you make your train?
Yep, I sure did. I'm sitting right here with my laptop open and the cell phone's working, and you know, I'm all wired up and ready to roll.
Very good. Modern technology at its finest. Well, let me start out by asking you.
I'm not sure it's all a blessing, frankly.
Well, we'll see. If you end up in a tunnel somewhere and I lose you, I'll have to explain that to the listeners right now. Let me start out by asking you about an urban legend, just to put this in perspective. I know a lot of folks have heard this quote and maybe have not heard it attributed to you, but I want to take care of that right away. According to urban legend, Jed, you're quoted as saying some time ago that going to war, this was back when we were going into war with Iraq, that going to war with, you're laughing, going to war without France is like going deer hunting without an accordion. Accurate quote, Mr. Babin?
Yes, ma'am. The rest of it is you just leave a lot of noisy, useless baggage behind. And it was... funny, I said that I first said it in a column in the American Spectator, then I said it to Chris Matthews on Hardball, which reduced him to sputtering rage, which is not hard to do with Chris. But the funny part was that on the set with the two of us was Ken Edelman, the arms controller. And Kenny is, you know, twice as smart as me and Chris put together, but he just couldn't think of anything to say. And at the commercial break, he turns to me and says, "You just think that up?"
Well, I think a lot of people tried to take credit for that.
It was pretty funny. Oh, yeah, I'd be glad to take credit for it. I never miss a shot at the French if I can possibly avoid it.
Well, on that subject, and that's not what we're here to talk about this afternoon, but I did want to just ask you this one question about France. Any change, do you think?
You know, I'm always hopeful, but I don't believe it.
Okay.
You know, if you look at Sarkozy right now, he's done a couple of things that really make me believe that there's no change from the old bad old days of Chirac. Number one, he has basically rejected the EU constitutions requirement for competition, so he's going to keep the French economy protectionist. And the second thing is his French foreign minister just the other day said that they still will not say that Hezbollah, which has more American blood on its hands than any other terrorist organization except Al-Qaeda, they're still not even going to say it's a terrorist organization. So, you know, I'm sorry, but business as usual under Monsieur Chirac, or rather Sarkozy or whatever, it doesn't make any difference.
Okay, well, let's turn now to your brand new book. It's called In the Words of Our Enemies by Jed Babin. And I was going to do my own synopsis of the book, but I thought, why do I need to do that if the foreword is written by Newt Gingrich? Let me just quote him. Newt says, "And if you think we're not in a crisis, the following record of what our enemies are saying about us should change your mind. Jed Babin has compiled an invaluable record of what America's enemies, from Osama bin Laden to Hugo Chavez to the radical regimes of North Korea and Iran, are saying about their intentions toward us. We've been warned. It's up to us now to make sure we have the leaders necessary to mount America's defense." All right, my question then, Jed, is why write this book? So they've said this stuff. Why do we need to pay attention to what they've said, and why are we not paying attention?
We really have paid the price all through our history for not paying attention to our enemies. We see, you know, you can go back to 1924, and Adolf Hitler was saying that, you know, he was going to arm Germany to retake what they lost in World War One. We ignored Osama bin Laden for 5 years prior to 9/11. So, you know, it's time for us to sit back and take these people at their word. It's like Rudy Giuliani said in a Wall Street Journal interview a couple of weeks ago. He said, "We need to stop trying to psychoanalyze these guys and just take them at their word." I totally agree.
All right, well, then what do we do with information like you put out in your, I think it's in the introduction of the book, you talk about how we must listen, absorb, study, and analyze. You've assembled the parts, and we need to be thinking about them and judge for ourselves. Our nation is enormously strong, militarily, politically, economically, and even diplomatically. But as of September 11th, 2001 proved, our great strengths are no guarantee of safety. Is the poor performance of our intelligence community the only explanation, or did we just not listen to the clear words of our enemy? If we read this stuff, what do we then do with it? I mean, what should we as average citizens, first of all, where can we find this kind of stuff other than in your book, heretofore, where do we find the new stuff?
Well, there's lots of new stuff. I mean, it's coming out every day on the Internet. It comes out in a whole variety of different sources. But, you know, you have to start with what I have in the book because the mainstream media does not report this stuff. You know, it's very easy to miss this because, you know, quite frankly, it's homework. Nobody likes to do homework, Renee, but we did the homework for you. And, you know, I wrote this book for one pretty big reason. Nobody else had undertaken to do this stuff before. And I really fervently believe through our history, as I said a minute ago, we don't pay enough attention to our enemies. It's time to do that. And the thing to do is to look at this and understand and make judgments. I'm not calling for war against anybody. I'm not saying we're at war. I mean, you know, obviously we are, and it would be superfluous for me to add to that. But the point really comes down to what can we do now to influence our government to maybe take steps that would avoid other future wars and save millions of lives.
And like you said, some of that is educating ourselves and studying it. Well, let me fast forward to Chapter 9, where you talk about Putin's Russia. And lately in the news, we've heard, you know, just several weeks ago, they had their little, what they were calling the lobster summit up at Kennebunkport. And the media seemed to report that, you know, it was all lovey-dovey and hand-holding between, you know, our president and the president of Russia. But you tell a different story in this book.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm really not even telling the
story.
Well,
you're right. You're just quoting.
That's one of the things I want to make very clear.
Right.
This book is not a political book. It's just literally quotations from people I think we might want to take a hard, hard look at. And the quotations from Vladimir Putin here, I think are very revealing. You know, just one example, he is saying that when asked about the Iranian nuclear program, he's saying that we're very aware of the position of our Russian partners. Partners? I mean, our Iranian partners. And what he's basically saying is Iran and Russia are partners. That sounds to me like a very careful choice of words that has really a lot of meaning laid into it.
How did you conduct your research for the book? Was it almost exclusively through the Internet?
Well, there was a lot of it. I mean, quite frankly, most of the research was done by my research assistant, Michelle Otis, who is now one of our news producers at Human Events. And it was mostly on the Internet and, you know, just from newspapers and from various sources. The Middle East Media Research Institute was invaluable because they provide translations from an awful lot of sources in the Middle East that, quite frankly, aren't otherwise available. So we did a lot of that, and Michelle came up with a huge amount of stuff. I mean, we have 240 pages worth of this book. It could have been 2,400 pages very easily.
Well, yeah, speaking of something that they came up with that I found quite frightening, in the Hate Networks chapter, you published some pretty frightening excerpts from Al-Qaeda's manual. Why don't we know about this? Why haven't we heard about some of these things that they have in their handbook?
Well, again, there's two things. Well, again, number one, you have the problem with the media not bothering to do homework. The other point of this is the media will not broadcast or print things that don't fit into their preconceived notions. We talk about media bias all the time, but media bias evidences itself in a lot of different ways, and one of these ways is that you just don't hear the stuff that the press just doesn't think you ought to hear. So if you don't see this, and you won't, in the New York Times or on CBS News, don't be surprised, because this stuff is out there. It's almost everywhere. It's not hard to find. It's just a matter of wanting to see what's in front of your nose.
Well, Jed, I know this isn't a political book, but you've done a lot of research, and you've got a lot of quotes in here from different world leaders, for lack of any other terminology. Personal opinion, do you think bin Laden is still alive? I mean,
he probably is. I don't know that it's really that significant that he is or he isn't. I think we have to look more at the issue of whether Al-Qaeda's franchise operations, and I think Al-Qaeda is more of a franchise than it is of a group anymore, because we've pretty much disrupted them and destroyed their command and control structure. They may be reforming under different guises and in different places, but the basic bottom line is that I don't think Al-Qaeda is as close-knit an organization as it was before 9/11.
All right, that being said, then, if Al-Qaeda is now this franchise enemy, and we're fighting this, continuing to fight the war in Iraq, where do things stand with Iran? Have we, and do you think we continue to underestimate their role or its role?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the great failings of the Bush administration is that it has continued to not address the threat of Iran. I was in Baghdad in December of 2005, and I got the briefing on these explosively formed penetrators, which are made almost exclusively, really exclusively in Iran. They're smuggled into Iraq by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, and they're the single most devastating weapon used against our troops. Now, we've known this for nigh on to 2 years. We haven't really done anything about it. So I just really don't feel that this administration has recognized the threat or done much of anything about it.
All right, talking of threats, you go through, you know, each chapter is devoted to one, and in a couple of them you cover a couple, you know, different countries, you know, some of these different Asian countries together with their leaders. But in the chapter on Fidel Castro, you say Fidel Castro is Cuba. You present a collage of Castro, and how, if at all, you know, pulling out your crystal ball, do you think his inevitable death will change U.S.-Cuban relations?
Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to change a great deal. I think Castro's brother, Raul, is in line behind him. And presuming he survives Fidel, you're also going to have the interference of the Venezuelans. Our friend Hugo Chavez, mm-hmm. we have a whole chapter on, basically is going to make sure that Cuba does not become free. And the real issue is whether we will step in to make Cuba free at that point, or whether we will allow Chavez to prop up the Castro regime even beyond Fidel's death.
Well, it's interesting because in the chapter that you have on Hugo Chavez, you include excerpts from a speech that he gave, you know, not too long ago, in which he calls President Bush the devil. And, you know, when you read that, what he puts, you know, what he says, you know, I think wasn't it at a meeting of the UN? Was that right? Right. Why is it that we tolerate that, and what can and should we do if we're not going to tolerate it?
Well, I think we have done too much to tolerate Chavez, but the question of what we do about it is a much more complicated one. I'm not for military intervention in Venezuela, at least at this point. But, you know, Chavez is a democratically elected leader who has sought, and is quite frankly staying in power only on the strength of his regime at this point. You know, I think that's very close to
him. All right, I'm losing you a little bit, Jed, so I'm going to go ahead and take a real quick break, which I need to do, and maybe by then your train will have passed through the tunnel or wherever it may be. But we'll be right back after this short break. Please stay tuned.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's talk radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
If you've just tuned in, we are talking with Jed Babin about his brand new book. It's called In the Words of Our Enemies, and it's excerpts from speeches and other written documents that have been given by some of our least favorite folks. And when we went to break, we were talking about Hugo Chavez. And I can't believe this quote, Jed, that's in the book. And I mean, I believe that it's something that he said, or you wouldn't have put it in the book. I know your editors wouldn't have let you done that. But he says, quote, "Let's save the human race. Let's finish off the U.S. empire. This task must be assumed with strength by the majority of the peoples of the world."
Well, I mean, why should that shock anybody? This is the guy who, as we talked a few minutes ago, goes to the UN and says that Bush is Satan. So So he pushes up the rhetoric every time he feels safe. He feels safe in places like Moscow and Tehran, and that's where he says these things.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about how perhaps we got where we are. And I mean, you indicated that this has been going on for a long time. But in the conclusion to the book, you write how we are confused about who the enemy is. Do you think some of our, at least the current state of our political partisanship and the bickering, does that simply strengthen our enemies and the positions that they take?
Well, of course. I mean, you see, when you have Harry Reid out there saying the war in Iraq is lost, when you see Dick Durbin saying that, you know, the Guantanamo Bay terrorist detention facility is the equivalent of a Nazi prison camp, I mean, those things embolden our enemy and, quite frankly, destroy the morale of our soldiers. I mean, the people who are saying these things are totally reckless and totally irresponsible. I mean, it's one thing to disagree with the president. I mean, Lord knows I disagree with George Bush on a whole pile of things. But it seems to me that saying the things that they say is clearly against America's interests.
Well, in the same chapter, the conclusion, you say our enemies and potential enemies are advertising themselves almost every day. It is our job to listen and judge which are threats and which are blowhards. Considering the liberal leanings of some of our media, how do we distinguish between the real threats and the blowhards then?
Well, that's our business. I mean, that's what we have a responsibility to do. What I'm basically saying is no matter what the media says or does, we as Americans have a responsibility to be informed and to make our own judgments. Are we just going to be following the media like sheep? I don't think we should. I think we need to make our own judgments. We need to read these words, the words in the book, and just make our own decisions. Be judgmental. Don't just sit there and take what the media says to you as the total truth. It just doesn't make any sense to me to do that.
All right, going beyond the media to the candidates then. You pose some questions at the end of the book. The book is In the Words of Our Enemies by Jed Babin. At the end of the book, you pose some questions for us. Whom among those who seek our votes can be trusted to not just listen, but to absorb, analyze, and act? Which of the candidates even sees the need to do so? Can you answer those questions in your opinion?
Well, I mean, at this point, I'm not sure that any of them really make that grade. I think some of the lower-tier Republican candidates clearly have the ability to do that. Whether they will or not, I don't know. The real issue is none of the Democrats have that ability, and I'm sure that a goodly number of the Republicans don't either. I think we need someone who has a very strong mind, a very analytical mind, and someone who can make good decisions under pressure. That's what we need in our next president. And, you know, I have not made up my mind. Human events has not decided who we are going to endorse yet. We will eventually endorse someone.
Okay. You put in an interesting final chapter, your appendix to the book. Tell the listeners first what's included in the appendix, and then I want to ask you why you chose to put that in.
Well, we put a bunch of things in the appendix. We put in, you know, for example, the transcript here of one of the interviews that you have from the folks in the Al-Qaeda side. And we have a bunch of things here, you know, reports and interviews. I'm sorry for all the background noise.
No, that's okay. What I'm referring to is your reference to Lieutenant Colonel Buzz Patterson.
Well, one of the things that we talk about here is Buzz's book. The fact is that we have seen an awful lot of people say that, you know, we did enough about bin Laden, that the Clinton administration was not negligent. I mean, it is very clear from Buzz's book and the excerpt we have here that the Clinton administration just basically ignored what was going on with bin Laden and did not do its job to protect America. In terms of the White House Situation Room, the incident that Buzz recounts is literally a situation where we had bin Laden pretty much cold and the Clintons chose not to act.
All right, well, it made an interesting end to the book In the Words of Our Enemies. We've got about 2 minutes left and we have a caller on the line who has a question for you. May I take it, Jed?
Sure.
Okay. Go ahead, Ed. It's your turn. We got about 2 minutes left, Ed. Go ahead.
Extremely interesting show that you're having today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I have him on for about an hour. Anyways, how much aid are we still giving to Russia a year?
Jed, do you know that?
How much aid are we giving who?
How much aid are we giving to Russia?
I don't think we're giving any aid to Russia at this point. But we are certainly granting them trade privileges, and I do believe that there are some other World Bank privileges and so forth that they get that perhaps they shouldn't. Russia, being allied like China, quite frankly, is allied with all of the pay some price for that, and the very least price would be some condemnation of their activities. I mean, Russia is building the nuclear program, the nuclear plants at Bushehr and the Natanz in Iran. So how can we reward that conduct? I don't think we should.
Okay, another thing, which Iran would be very easy to take out, would be very easy to cause all sorts of problems. Either you cut the importation of gasoline into Iran, which would cause total chaos, or the second thing, I mean, they're killing our men, and they would kill George Bush if they could in a second. How about dropping a 500-pound bomb the next time Aminajad puts on a parade? Right on.
Well, I think those are good points, but the problem is we are not going to cut off the gasoline imports there because the Europeans are not going to agree to that. The Russians are not going to agree to that. So that's not going to happen, and it's not going to be easy for us to do it because our so-called allies here won't cooperate.
We could blame it on Israel.
As to taking direct action against Ahmadinejad, I think that may very well come at some point, but I don't think this this president or this administration has made the decision to do that sort of thing.
One last thing. We're fighting this war with our hands further tied than we did in Vietnam.
Ed, I'm sorry, but that's all the time that we have.
Okay.
I appreciate it. We'll have Jed come back. Jed, thank you for your time this afternoon. We appreciate In the Words of Our Enemies by the book.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.